You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Performing for Her Majesty, learning from mom, and theater, museum, or laboratory. Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Sean Chandler, and you're listening to Your Program Is Your Ticket, a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. Today's guests are company director Christopher Poach and artistic director Jonathan Moltz of Artless Theater Company, a UK-based professional theater company intent on defying the negative stereotypes of Christian theater to communicate the good news without being cliched, safe, tame, or predictable. Directors Poach and Moltz are part of my Theater is for Everyone series, where I'm interviewing theater artists outside of the major locales and influences to give them a chance to be heard, discuss their triumphs, challenges, and misconceptions. Artless Theater Company has written, directed, performed, and toured multiple theater productions with the major honor of writing and performing a sketch for Scripture Union's 150th anniversary celebration in front of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. Directors Chris and John have been creating theater together since secondary school drama lessons. After school, John went on to study drama and theater studies, leaving with a master's degree and the University of Kent Technical Excellence Award. While post-university, Chris began in ministry work with Scripture Union. Now, please keep in mind that our interviews are recorded at different times to optimize schedules, just in case the audio sounds different. I'm excited, so let's bring them on.
Hi, Chris and John, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket.
Hello, it's good to be here.
Hi, thanks for having
us. Hello. It's my pleasure. I'm so excited that you responded to my email and you're doing the show. This is really, really cool. How are things in the United Kingdom?
You know, we're so united right now. You know, COVID has made us all just get along with each other, our politicians. It's a fantastic and happy place now. Like anywhere in the world, we have our gloomy days. But actually, as I look out the window, it's blue sky. It's near the end of the day. We've done some good work today and I feel very chipper.
Yeah, we've just got through the Omicron wave. Well, hopefully it seems to be on the downward spiral. I got maybe the Omicron, I don't know. But last week I did have COVID last week, which was interesting. You know, felt awful for 2 days, but I've recovered and feeling fine, thank God. And but yes, yeah, it's a lovely sunny day here, if you can believe that or not.
It's not going to be warm, but it's sunny.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Thank you. And it was such. I was just going to say it was great getting your email. You know, we've not done an international podcast yet, so this is a first for us. So yeah, thanks for reaching out.
Of course, it was my pleasure. I will say this: I reached out to probably about 7 or 8 different companies that have a religious affiliation to get that perspective, and you were the only ones who responded. I interviewed Dr. Nathan Albert for my previous podcast, number 105, and he was set up for me by one of our people at Broadway Podcast Network. So I appreciate that you were open to this, and I'm very excited to hear your perspective and thoughts and feelings and hear about what you're doing as well.
No, that's great. The organization's pretty small. Chris and I are the two employed members of the company, and we like to check our emails, and we know what we try and respond to every single one of them. So it's I'm so glad you reached out, and it's a pleasure to be here.
My pleasure entirely. Let's start by having you introduce yourselves and tell us about your backgrounds and tell us about Artless Theater Company.
That's great. Chris, I'll let you go first.
I'm Chris. I'm the company director of Artless. I'm, 29 years old, knocking on that door of 30. It's getting me a bit nervous. Me and John have known each other for a really long time. We've known each other since school. So we kind of grew up together at school, and we were in the same drama class. And I think we hit it off quite soon.
I think we were about 15 years old. I think walking out of a drama class, and I think we both enjoyed the similar sort of style of comedy, and we were having a discussion about that. And yeah, I think it just sort of spiraled from there. And 15 years later, we're still having that conversation.
Yeah. And so we, after school, we went our separate ways, as you do. I went on to study history, believe it or not. I mean, I really love, obviously, drama and theatre, but I had in my mind, I was like, oh, if I go to do this at university, I'm making, you know, this my life, you know, am I going to make a living, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you're setting me up here because I did go and do drama theatre studies at university.
Yeah, you didn't care.
I had reckless abandon. I knew this is, I was a bit by the bug, too young, and I knew this was me.
Well, because my other passion obviously was history. And so I thought, well, that's a bit of a safer bet. You know, that's, you know, not, I'm sure I can get a job.
Yeah, I'm sure. History. Yeah, because we know a lot of full-time historians out there.
There's a few, you know, probably more secure than, you know, theatre. But funnily enough, here you find me, you know, running a theatre company. So it's funny how life works. Over to you, John.
My name is John Malt, and I'm the artistic director of Artless Theatre Company. My background is an interesting background in terms of my lineage. My mother's side of my family were German, and my dad's side are East End Jews and Eastern European immigrants to England. So a very interesting dichotomy growing up, but a fantastic flavor of life. And so I was surrounded as a young person, you know, around the Jewish festivals and doing Purim plays and things like that. But my family were Messianic Jews, so Jews for Jesus, as you probably know in New York, got an interesting reputation. I'm not sure what they're like in the US, but yeah, that's my background. And so, like Chris mentioned, we went to school together, and I went to do drama and theatre studies at University of Kent in Kent in the United Kingdom, and I specialised in contemporary performance practice. So my interest in background of theatre is more in the sort of avant-garde side, performance art side. But yeah, as we've worked together, we've found a very interesting middle ground and a marriage of sorts. And that's, yeah, where it takes us up to today. We became an established charity in 2017 as Artless, and have been slowly building up our repertoire of plays. We write our own stuff. We tour that around the country, but also we're open to loads of different sorts of projects. So we've done some radio projects, and we did an interactive children's piece of theatre with our local council two Christmases ago, 2019, just before the dreaded COVID. We were able to do some interactive storytelling experiences and immersive promenade style things with children. So we've done quite a range of things, which I think is, I think, testament to our tastes, but also the sort of theatre we want to make. We're still landing on it. But as you alluded to, Sean, we're both Christians, and that's something which is absolutely integral to our lives. I became Christian around age 16, and my life's been on a journey since then. And I'm not sure whether people listening, you know, what your experience of Christianity is or how different it is in the US. But it's been an amazing journey for me personally, and I've seen my life change in loads of different ways I never thought it would. So I'm an open book and love chatting about that. And that's something which has just influenced the work we make. And I think when we sat together after university and decided to make Artless a thing, we had at the core of it that faith that drives it. And I think that's just because we've experienced such amazing things in our lives that we want to open that up for other people. We want people to have an experience of Christianity beyond what they may have experienced in the past or may have perceptions of, which are negative, or have had bad experiences of. We want to bring it back to a universal root and something which can be of value and of goodness for everyone. So that is a long and short way of giving our backgrounds and sort of where we arrived to today.
It's been a long journey, you know, ever since that. I think we met in a
coffee
cafe
shop.
Nero, a coffee shop, in central London. And I was working in kind of banking finance in central London. I Well, yeah, I didn't become a history teacher, did I?
I was going to say, you were their resident historian.
I really didn't like that. I kind of wanted to get out. Obviously, we'd good friends. We were still in contact and whatnot. And I remember us meeting up and being like, you know what? If we want to do this, let's just go for it. You know, and this is the time. We'll give it a shot. We'll see what happens. And yeah, and it's just been a, it's not been all, you know, easy. It's certainly been a journey. It's been fun. It's been challenging. We love what we do.
Excellent. Talk about your production process. Now, you said that you write all your own shows. Mm-hmm. Do you ever work with material outside of your own? Do you ever bring in writers from the outside and or ask for submissions, or are you selective about that?
So in terms of what we've done so far in our longer running tours and larger scale productions, those have generally been written by Chris and myself. Those are more the more dramatic pieces. When we've done sort of smaller scale comedic things or written sketches or like cabaret style things, we've collaborated with people. There's more in the early days. But now where we would write and tour something nationally. So the last 3 or 4 productions have been written by us, but inspired by source texts. So Tour with God, which we started in 2018, was an adaptation of a book, a biography of a World War I chaplain. So a Christian vicar who was sent to the trenches in the First World War. And it was an adaptation of the story of his life written by his grandson. He's actually related to Ralph Fiennes, which is very unusual. We met with him to discuss the adaptation. He said, "Oh yeah, my cousin's in the industry. He's Ralph Fiennes."
Wow.
So I was like, okay, well, that was a bit starstruck. So we adapted that and particularly where our work is inspired by the Bible, that is, we use as a source text as well. But generally, we are quite biographical in our work. So the last 2 productions have been telling the story of someone else. And that's been how we work. But our process begins at that conception. But in terms of, because we're such in a small scale and we do create the work and produce the work. And in terms of my skill set, and I'm really passionate about sound design and we've got a lighting designer who we work with, Charlie, who's sort of the third guy of Artless. And we really work ideas through in the writing process. So, you know, like it's a very collaborative and, it's all done at the same time. You know, we're developing as we're going, and the writing is influenced by the technical things that we desired, whether we're going to use projection sound, this, that. It will then influence what we do on the writing floor. So it's a process of you know, shaping, which we go through.
And we have always, just from the beginning, before even forming Artless, we just love writing. From an early age, really, you know, we were writing in sixth form. So when you're around, how old are you? 17, 18, you know, around then we were writing stuff. So it's kind of second nature to us to write our own stuff and put our own stuff on. And I always say to any actors that we work with or get in, or just younger people that might be, you know, looking to get into the industry, I would say give writing a go, you know, like, you don't have to write massive plays or anything, but, you know, just give it a go, and how that will influence your performances in the future, how you read other people's scripts and stuff. It's always good to just give it a go, you know, have a go at writing. And and that's kind of what we did. And I don't know, just, yeah, I love writing.
You know, the last few years I wouldn't say I'm the primary script writer, but while COVID was going on, we got Masterclass subscriptions, you know, shout out to Masterclass. And David Mamet's playwriting course was has been very influential to us. And his, I mean, he's what a prolific writer, but some of those the craft, I don't think I'd really understood the craft of script writing. And I think that's something which has developed in us as storytellers, really, because as I mentioned before, my background is more of that performance side rather than some more traditional theatre styles. So it's been that curve of developing our voice and working on what is the end product that we want to take out there. I think I'd take on more that role of the dramaturg of understanding the whole feel and the sense of a show. And I think we're very invested in the environment of the final piece. And I think we always want people to be transported, no matter. I mean, our audience is not just Christians or non-Christians. Anyone's welcome. Anyone's invited to see our productions. And we want people to be transported. We want people to be placed in a world, because theatre is that liminal space. You know, it's not the everyday. It's a special time, and it's a safe time for people to step out of their own shoes and to either inhabit the story of someone else, or to experience something, or explore ideas that they may have not explored before, in a safe place. And that's always in our mind as we write and produce. We want it to be something that we would enjoy watching and something that we would not be bored by, because that is just the cardinal sin of theatre, just being boring. We don't want people to be bored. And I've been bored too many times when I've been at the theatre.
I think we were limited by the material that is out there somewhat.
Terms of Christian based,
in terms of Christian based kind of performance and skits and things like that. So when I was younger, my mum used to run like the church drama group that I was a part of, and I remember that was even a big kind of problem for her, because there would, you know, there'd be sketchbooks and stuff, but a lot of them would just not be very good, you know. And she then started writing her own stuff, and I think that just then has, you know, fed into my life and just how we approach it, really. And it allows us to really have control of kind of what we're doing and where we want to take Artless and stuff. I think really the main thing is just that I find the joy in writing these plays and doing that. I mean, we're open to outside material, and if anyone wants to submit a play, we have had that a few times.
I'm giving Marie.
We're open to it, but that's kind of how we work at the moment.
And that has changed, and it will change, because we're learning.
Well, I myself am a writer, and I enter a lot of festivals and competitions. And from what I can see, it feels like film and TV are a little bit more open to having their festivals and their competitions be thematic towards religion, a lot of them that, but I don't see many plays or theater companies doing that. And I wonder why that is.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not 100%, you know, I don't know the US and how the climate of theater is over there. I read and I see, but I don't know it because I'm not there. In the UK, we're part of maybe a handful, 6 or 7 professional Christian theater companies. And I'd say it is similar here. There's not a great gear towards it, where you'd see a lot of other art forms be quite embracing of people of faith or Christians, particularly creating work. I think theatre is such a subjective thing, really, in terms of people's tastes and people's experiences or expectations of it. I mean, in the UK, probably the most popular theatre, apart from musicals, the most popular form is probably pantomime, being a big seasonal event for people in the UK to go and visit, and maybe the only time in the year they go to the theatre. So I've never seen a Christian pantomime, but you've been in one, haven't you?
I have been in 3, I think. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they were.
I've not seen them, so I can't judge.
No, they were good, you know.
But I think there's in the climate of political works, I think Christianity or religion does fit in really well, but maybe there just aren't people Maybe it just doesn't sell tickets. I don't know.
I think
maybe
people are a bit afraid of just going there. You know, maybe
not sure what they might hear.
Yeah. And also I think one of the biggest things is I think people think it's going to be amateur. You know, it's not going to be any good. And so, you know, why am I going to go and watch something that's just, yeah, amateur and a bit rubbish, really? And hopefully that's something that we've set at our core, is that we want to change those stereotypes and show, you know, this isn't, but hopefully people come and think that's not, you know, amateurish and boring, and they feel entertained, you know, challenging our thinking. You know, we don't try to thrust our views on people, but we want, I think we want to show an expression of our faith and who we think, you know, God is. And it's up to the audience to how they receive that. But I just think, yeah, maybe producers just don't really want to touch that. You know, they think maybe it's a poison chalice. Yeah, maybe it's
I think theatre is, you know, in its sort of core, it is very anti-establishment. And I think there's a tradition of that being there. And, you know, what's a bigger establishment, particularly in this country, than the Church of England? Or the church is quite a... people have grown up around the iconography and the, you know, the Western Christian lexicon. You know, everything is influenced by the church, in, you know, in inverted commas. I think where our expression of faith is really detached from that modern expression of Christianity. But, you know, I can speak for myself. My expression of Christianity, my understanding of Christianity is more linked to the first century, you know, Middle East and the Jewish Jesus. You know, this idea of who was this man that historically existed, and what do his words have to influence on me today? I think that the church is a well known thing, a well established thing. Christianity isn't a new idea, isn't going anywhere. And I think people, I think there's probably a perception that that's old fashioned, that's old hat, that's archaic. We've done theatre on that. You know, we've heard the stories of C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. We know the allegories. We know, you know, Christ as a symbol is permeated into modern, you know, postmodern art, even, you know, through film and TV. We've seen resurrection stories come and go so many times. Maybe it's just a thought of, we're moving past that. We're in our postmodern time. You know, God is dead. Nietzsche said that, you know, so it's like, maybe there's just not a relevancy or a perceived relevancy to the general population. But I think that people are inherently spiritual and are interested in finding out whether there is more to life than this, whether there is something more, whether the spiritual world exists, whether, you know, I think theory is metaphysical as well. You know, it's a weird thing. So I don't know, Sean. I don't know why there isn't more.
Sure you do. You just talked about it. You just said it. And I'm so glad that's something that you guys analyze. I would assume that you do, that you talk about why is maybe there a big... Why are we afraid to communicate with each other?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
I know that I'm not religious. I consider myself to be spiritual, but I'm sometimes afraid myself to like go to a church or I have been there, but I have to realize I myself will take responsibility for myself and say that I need to be open-minded or more open-minded and accept other people for what they're doing and what fulfills them. We don't have to, change each other, to hear each other, or to listen to each other. I think that that's what I'm finding is, you know, I'm finding a lot of my own guilt and my own phobia is being addressed by these shows, and that I can only take responsibility for myself. So that's just that's sort of a epiphany I've had with this. And are you guys okay with that? Is with me telling you that? Is that something where it's like, well, maybe you should push more towards us or what? Because I will tell you, my spirituality comes mostly from 12-step groups. I've been clean and sober for 33 years. And so as you probably, thank you. It's like, it's just like my normal day now, but you're aware of, you know, God as we understand him and turning over and things like that. So, that's where I, that's my perspective of it. And so do you feel sort of the push from people who are maybe afraid that you're going to try and influence something that they've already set in place for themselves? Do you feel that?
I think that's a valid fear for people to have. And I think as human beings, we should, and I stand, you know, I resonate with what you say about that fear of, you know, once you've established what you feel and you believe, it's actually a hard thing to do to surround yourself with other opinions and other thoughts. And you know, that's why the echo chamber of Facebook is, you know, the algorithm has worked the way it is to help people hear the same thing that they're hearing and from each facet, political facet, and each subculture. You know, I think we have, as a human, as human beings, moved further away from being able to be part of that marketplace of ideas. And it's a shame, and I'm part of it as well. And I think I challenge myself to watch the piece of theater that I don't want to, or I don't think I would like, or I don't think would, I would necessarily agree with, or, and sometimes I'm surprised, or sometimes, you know, but that's the problem with a medium, which is inherently entertaining. You know, you want to be entertained. And I think, when you say you want to go to the theater, how often do you say to yourself, I really want to have my whole worldview challenged today? As no one wants to do that. I certainly don't want to do that. And I think there's something in maybe the history and the tradition of people's experiences of Christianity, where there is that, the fear of being put in that place of trust. Cause you know, being an audience member, being in that theatrical setup, you have to put your trust in the people that are putting on the show. You know, it's a place of exchange, but where you're passive as an audience member, there isn't much of an exchange from you. There's no right of reply in that setting. So, apart from getting up and walking out, there's no way of really responding and being interactive. So, I can totally understand that, and I can see that in myself, that feeling of, I don't trust that I want to put my trust in this production or this person. In the same way, I don't go and watch certain films and directors that I've not enjoyed their show, you know, I've really hated that film. I'm not going to go watch his next one or her next, you know, or something like that. So, I hear that definitely.
Yeah, and it would be such a shame if theatre becomes that echo chamber, you know, where it's just you're all hearing or watching the kind of the same stuff. I think theatre is a medium for us to be challenged. Like John said, we want to be entertained, but I do think if you just left somewhere and you're just like, it's entertaining, that's kind of surface level. I want something a bit deeper that makes me, I come out and I'm like, I hadn't thought about that or thought about that from that, you know, view. And I mean, for us, we do face these kind of barriers and challenges. I mean, for example, we have an arts council here, and it is near impossible for us to get funding from them, just you know, we are a faith-based company, which is really disappointing because I'm like, oh, we've got, you know, well, I believe we've got good stuff, you know, to put on, but we're limited. Whereas, okay, for example, obviously I'm pro-life, but if a theatre company wanted to play about pro-choice, I would be absolutely fine with that. I don't have a problem. I think that's good. That's great. You know, but to feel limited in that way is a bit of a shame. And I think, yeah, theatre should be, open to all. And, I mean, for example, we're trying to, I guess, break those stereotypes though as well about religious theatre. And our new show, If Prison Walls Could Speak, is looking though at the themes, not just of religion, but of justice. Okay. So it follows the true life story of a guy called, Peter Jacek, who works with the persecuted church in Africa. So, Christians that are either, beaten for their faith, for being a Christian, churches that get destroyed, and, you know, doing that kind of advocacy work. And when he was out in Sudan, he ended up getting arrested. He found out that the secret police had been following him, had actually been following him when he was in a conference, I think the year before in Eritrea, which is, you know, crazy to think about. But yeah, and he was arrested. He gets put in awful conditions in Sudan. He finds out that he's actually imprisoned with ISIS fighters, which is obviously a massive shock to him. And his own fellow cellmates beat him and torture him, obviously for him being a Christian. But also the play doesn't just focus on Peter's story, but the story of millions across the globe. You know, it's a scary stat that one in six Christians across the globe face a form of persecution. Now, obviously, we might not see that as much in the West, but in places, China, India, many places in Africa, they're facing even death for, you know, having their faith. And we want to use this piece of work to highlight that injustice, but also we want to show a part of God, you know, in that, the expression of God, that we know God's a loving God who comes beside us when we face suffering, when we face these difficulties. But we feel, you know, this, we designed and wrote this play for everyone. You know, this isn't just, we don't want to just be entertaining Christians. We say that all the time, don't we, John, to each other. I'm always like,
oh, yeah,
we don't just want to entertain Christians. You know, that's not what we're about. And we want to make theatre that's for everyone. But yeah, we definitely face those kind of those barriers. But yeah.
I think misconception is a big barrier as well. I mean, I believe that in a big way, Christianity is misrepresented, whether by people, whether by misunderstanding. And I know my experience of Christianity is different to other people's. And I just want to reconcile that. I want to reconcile people with the historical and actual person of Jesus and what he had to say, and to think, you know what, that's the measuring stick. I want you to understand what I believe. Don't look at any figure that or any person that you've seen represent Christianity before. I don't want you to take their word for it. I want you to go straight to the source, have an understanding of what this has a relevancy on my life and could have a relevancy for yours, but also, I want you to have an understanding of what it is. You know, I think understanding each other is a big way of loving one another. And that is the staple of Christianity, you know, love one another, love even your enemy, love everyone as God loves you. So it's like, how do you love someone? You listen to them, you understand them, and you create a space to share. And I think that's what we try and do.
I think that good theater, no matter what its theme or message, and I didn't make this up, but I read it somewhere, it should accomplish the three E's. It should entertain, educate, and then edify the audience. if you're teaching them, if you're keeping them engaged, and at the end they're uplifted, I think that you've done your job. Mm. At least that's what I always try to do, particularly when I'm writing a play. Okay, I have. First of all, I want to say, Chris, thank you for mentioning the name of the series that you're on right now. Theater is for Everyone. I appreciate that. That's so okay. Nice. That's very, very cool. Thank you. Okay, I have a request. This is like a mini request and a mini question based off of that question before we move on. A lot of people don't know what this is, but can you, particularly in the States, but can you tell our listeners who don't know, because I didn't know, what a pantomime is in England? Because I think in America, we think, you know, a mime with the white face.
Right, yeah, yeah. Of course.
But it's not
that.
Yeah,
no. Oh, no, I would take a lot of pleasure in describing the pantomime. I'm a big fan of pantomime.
I'm not a massive fan of pantomime, but John loves it.
So pantomime has its sort of roots in the sort of commedia dell'arte, sprung out of Italy, that physical comedy, a performance, sort of ensemble work. But the pantomime in Britain is a very culturally significant thing. It's very low art. It's low art, 100%, and it knows it. It's kitschy, it's camp, it's fun. So the pantomime dame is probably the most, iconic, part of the pantomime. And it's a drag act. And it's something which has been a very long established part of British culture for a long time. So it's often the same Cinderella or Puss in Boots or Dick Turpin, these sort of classic, folky tales told, for school children and groups that come in, you sing along. There are set call out phrases. These cliches which are always thrown in there. He's behind you. Everyone's like, he's behind you. And I mean, I'm talking, I sound like absolute massive fan. I am. Actually, I am. I'm going to own that. So there's a social contract. When you step into a pantomime, you know what's going to happen. It's going to be a good old, an old knees up, as you would say in the East End. It's a lot of fun. It's silly. I'm not sure whether have I painted the picture well enough?
Yeah, I think so. It's for the whole family. I definitely love the interaction with the audience. You know, it's very on the nose stuff, but you've got the classic villain heroes.
Who you boo.
And the music's great. The costumes are extremely flamboyant.
If anyone in the US ever wants to come over to the UK, they usually start around December until mid to late January. It is the best way to spend a winter in England, and they're everywhere. And a lot of your celebrities come over and do them. It's full of B, C, D listers. It's fantastic.
No way. Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, big time. Big time. I mean, soap actors, pop stars. Yeah, I mean, you've got it. You've got it all, really.
You got to work, and a check's a check, right?
Oh, if you've ever seen the Ricky Gervais series Extras, there's pantomime features in that. So I think one of the episodes, he's in a pantomime, and he's playing, I think, Buttons or someone in Cinderella. And rewatch that and you'll see a general understanding.
I watched one on one of the Broadway platforms and I think it was Cinderella. And I was like, I don't know what's going on here. I mean, I know the beats of Cinderella. I know they're different versions, but I was like, what is happening? I don't get it, but I was entertained. I thought it was funny. And once it's like one of those things where you sort of have to like give yourself a chance to get into the rhythm of it. Mm-hmm. And once you do, then it really clicks into your head.
Yeah.
Like Shakespeare or ballet or opera or something like that.
You've got to know.
Kabuki.
Yeah.
We struggled with Kabuki.
You've got to know what it is, you know, what it's about, you know, and once you get that, you're like, oh, okay. You know. This is what this is.
Okay, now here's my question.
Yep.
I ask this every time this word comes up. Dramaturg or dramaturge?
Oh, you know what? I split between drama. I say dramaturg.
I've always said dramaturg, yeah.
Dramaturge. But then you have dramaturgy. So I'm yet to know.
So whatever floats your boat.
Whatever floats your boat.
We know what both of them mean, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think so. Yeah, yeah. I don't think anyone truly does know what it means, but it makes you sound like you know what you mean. So it's good.
For those who don't know, a dramaturge is usually a person who goes through the material and is like sort of, it's their job to sort of pick it apart for you and challenge certain things, certain facts and that. So, you know, it's.
And to marry each element of the piece to make it a one cohesive experience. And then that's my twisted way of looking at it.
It's really fun when you're the writer. Trust me, I've had dramaturgs. Oh, sure. Turges get in and really send me like 8 pages of notes on a script. But it honestly, it does help. It really helps a lot. Otherwise, you know, you're as a writer, you're like looking at the big picture of the whole thing. And so, you know, have somebody go in and say, this is wrong. This is working. Well, this is not. It's like an editor on a book.
That's what we have all the time, because that's mine and John's relationship pretty much. Because when it comes to writing, you know, we'll come together at the start of a project and we'll know roughly the story and, you know, what we want to say, what we want to tell, the feel of it. And then obviously we'll try as much as we can to break it down. And then, I'll go off and start writing. You know, I'll do 2 scenes or whatever, and then I'll bring it back to John. He reads through it, you know, and,
isn't that Greek myth of, is it Atlas, you know, who holds the weight of the world while a crow pecks at him?
That's what it feels like, yeah.
Is it a crow?
it's know, four pages of notes on a 2-page scene, right?
Yeah. Or a fist fight.
Yeah, or a fist fight. Yeah. But, we've learned a lot.
Yeah, we've grown in brotherly love. That is for sure.
It totally shows. Talk about theater and its place in religion in general. What are your feelings about that?
Yeah, you know, I've been mulling this over, and this is something we think about and talk about a lot, particularly as we are, you know, inherently a faith-based company. I mean, if you look at the origins of theater, you know, the Greek theater was a religious experience. It was a religious outpouring, and I think the religion and politics have so intertwined, not so much politics of, you know, of our leadership, but in terms of how society is, how society functions and how we relate to one another. I think that there is an integral part of religion, which is about communication. You know, the idea of the prophet is someone that has a beeline to God, has a word from God, has something spoken from an almighty God to people through themselves. And I mean, as I mentioned before, I'm interested in performance art and that sort of end of performance. And the Bible actually has some fascinating descriptions of performance art. In the Jewish tradition, you know, Ezekiel is a figure who receives a warning from God for the city and to tell the city that it's about to be destroyed by an incoming army. He builds a model set of the city and performs rites and rituals around it in this allegorical and very physical and very graphic. If you ever read the source text, it's fascinating how we as human beings have been created to communicate and have been given creativity as a gift to tell stories to one another. I mean, anthropologically speaking, every culture in every part of the world tells stories and has told stories since time began, you know, to tell a story. But I think part of that story has always been, you know, where did we come from? Where are we going? What is out there? And I think that theatre has a very strong place in that, and particularly people from different religions. I'm not as versed in other religions, but in Christianity, the person of Jesus was a storyteller. He spoke parables. He communicated things of God through story, through that medium, you know, entertainment, but also with a heart to share something powerful. So I think theatre and religion, faith are not mutually exclusive. They can be, and I think people can pretend that theatre isn't political or spiritual or these things, but everything has a voice. Everything is speaking to us. And you know, even postmodern thinking, you go and watch something, you may receive something for yourself, which is a religious thought or something. So that's my two cents, my two pence. On that matter, what do you think, Chris?
No, I agree. You know, I think God loves theatre and he loves stories. You know, I think we always think of the, I don't know, bearded guy in the sky who's a bit, you know, or don't like this, you know, distant and stuff. But no, I think he loves theatre and stories. And like John had said, with Jesus telling parables, telling stories in that way. And I think it's just very natural for us that they would mix and blend. I mean, our faith is the core and bedrock of who we are. And so, of course, we're going to bring that into our work and into our passions. Great, yeah. You know, why would we separate them, you know? And hopefully people can connect with that. And I think everyone does that in theatre. Even if you don't have a, you know, faith, you're bringing yourself into these stories, into these characters. And our faith just spills out into our writing and into our work.
Yeah, and I think the way faith works in my mind is it's people sharing their own stories and testimonies and people having an experience and then sharing that experience. And if that's not, you know, I mean, biographical works that we've worked on, you know, that is what we're just doing, simply telling the story, like Chris mentioned, Peter Jacek or of the World War One chaplain that I mentioned before. We're just giving the story which they passed on and they experienced with moments which the audience will have to ask themselves, do I believe that happened? If that happened supernaturally, did this thing happen? So part of Peter's story, he is being tortured. He's been about to be waterboarded. And he has a vision of Jesus, or has a vision of him watching over him. And as he's been beaten, he doesn't feel the pain anymore. And this is something we've met Peter over Zoom and heard him his story in the flesh, and I think we believe what he said, and we've shared that message through the story that we've shared. And you know, people can take it or leave it. You know, if that's the truth, it's the truth. If it's not, then it's not. And I think it's that sharing and listening, as we mentioned before, which is at the heart of religious practice and human practice, you know.
Yeah.
Depends what you define religious, really. Some people would define it as something in a box. Some people would just describe it as just human experience, you know.
Yeah. And I think, what was I going to say? Went out of my mind. That's what I was going to say. You know, we hear a lot that maybe that phrase of like, well, you know, we don't want you, I don't know, shoving your beliefs down our throat or Bible bash, you know, that kind of language that's used. But we just want to show, yeah, maybe an expression of who we believe that, you know, God is, you know, through that play, you know, Prison Walls, that, you know, we believe God's a loving God, a caring God, and that it's up to the audience to, you know, if they want to be like, okay, I've not thought about that at all, and to kind of, yeah, break down some of those barriers in that way. But we just want to show that. We don't want to, you know, like you said, we don't want to thrust this down people's throats, but you know, we're just trying to, yeah, show that expression of who we think you know, God is, and how he might have impacted our lives. And that, like I said, spills into our writing, into our plays, and it's completely up to the audience to how they want to, you know, interpret that and internalize it. So yeah, I think it can marry very well.
That's great. I love the core philosophies that you're talking about there. And I'm glad that you talked about the theatrical element of it, because I think when a lot of people think art and religion, they think paintings and statues and you know, various relics and things like that. And so it's nice. There's something about theater that's a little more temporary in the mind.
Immediate.
And you go, and then all you're left with when you leave is just what's there. And also it's, some people just don't like going to the theater. They just, it's not their thing. So I appreciate you both touching on that so well. Did you have to do any internal changing or reconciliation of your opinions or taste in theater as you developed a Christianity focused company? Did you struggle with any of that and have to figure that out?
I've always really struggled with the term Christian theater company, and something that we do actually still to this day talk a lot about, simply because I think it carries a lot of negative connotations, right or wrong. But I own it. I mean, I still choose to own it. And I think one of the biggest changes for me is understanding storytelling in its place, as I mentioned before, a sort of anthropological roots, but it's storytelling is actually something so innate in us as human beings. And I think I'd, because of my taste in theatre, I've always thought, no, I don't need to tell stories. I don't want to be too too traditional. We don't need to do this. We can just create this sort of performance piece. But I think as I've tried to lean into what we've been speaking about, I think the sharing of stories has been something that I've been having more of a I've lent towards more and had to grow in. That how to tell stories well is definitely something that's come out in me.
That's one of my number one answers on this show. I think you guys are my 106th episode, and so many people, when they talk about their baseline feelings of theater, say I like to tell stories. I tell stories. I may hear that phrase on and on and on. So that's not something that is exclusive to you. That's what a lot of people, that's I guess a standard, a philosophy that they have. So that's absolutely right on as far as, probably about 80% of my guests.
Yeah.
what would you rather I say other than, Christian based theater company? What's the phrase that you prefer?
You can say it.
No, that's great.
Because that's true. I think it's just that we ourselves have had that conversation of do we say that's what we are? Like, are we a Christian theater company?
What does that mean? Because Christians, an organization cannot have a religious belief, or, you know, it's that idea.
Yeah. Or are we simply Christians that do theatre? But I think it's, you know, we want to own that. We're not ashamed of that. Mm. But that's our core of who we are. And as I previously mentioned, it feeds into all of our work and what we do. And you can have that the same with other theatre companies. They might not be religious, but they all have the same underpinning identity or ideas, and in the same, you know, it's kind of in the same vein as that. I think we're somewhat limited with kind of how we can approach churches, or I think
we primarily tour to churches and sort of Christian organizations or communities, and that's just how we've generally been able to gather an audience. And as Chris is saying, it's I think for the established church, they're not looking for something too experimental. I think we've had to dial back a bit, or to slowly, like we said before, wanted to change the perception of Christian theatre, but actually that perception exists because maybe people like that sort of thing. Things that are feel more easily digested, more sketch based, more familiar in the stories that are told.
Great expectations.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
But I think we, like Chris said before, we want to push the boat out in what Christian theatre can be. But the audience that's already there for that, I think, needs some gentle, we need to take them on the journey into where we want to go with it. I think we integrate in more and more multimedia and how we use multimedia, and we're aiming to tour a passion play, which is told through headphones with live performance. Which is the first we know of a sort of Christian company using that sort of technology, which has been around for, you know, for the last decade, been used a lot in sort of off fringe theatre. But I think that we came in a very bullish in that sense of we're going to change it all. We're gonna have this. And at the end of the day, you need an audience. We're growing an audience, the model in which we've been growing in is one of we're taking it and to people who host it and then invite their local communities to watch, and they're only investing in things which they can trust. And I think we're trying to gain that trust until we can say, look, go with us on this one. Everyone's got to wear a mask. We're going to be falling in from the ceiling. You know, there's going to be a oil wrestling pit. No, I mean, that's not exactly my plans, but you know, there's when people hear that, they go, oh, no way. But if they trust who's doing it, then they're like, okay, maybe I'll give it a try. Don't quote me on that. But if anyone else steals that idea, I will be in touch.
No one wants to see me in a big, like, baby pool filled with oil.
For all we know, you're in one now because we only see your upper half. So.
No, it's jeans down there.
Okay.
How has the Artless Theatre Company dealt with COVID?
Good question.
Thank you.
When lockdown in the UK started, because of the way we're set up and we're a charity and what we call a charitably incorporated organization, we were able to go on furlough. So I don't know if furlough made it over, was a similar thing abroad, but government bailed us out for a few months, where there was just nothing coming in. But as I mentioned, as a charity, we do have a base of people that donate to us, which is really such generous people that really buy into what we've spoken about today and our vision of how we want to share this story. And I think that's been a way of us surviving through this time, because the bookings can come in and then a wave happens, bookings go out, and we have, you know, sort of an honor system in how we approach our hosts and people that host us. We don't enter into a strict contract, and we have that grace to say, you know, if you can't put it on, then we won't charge you anything. And you know, that's it's a hard line to toe, but I mean, like we said before, we live by faith, and it's that thought of, if we think God's asking us to do this and is equipping the work to happen, you know, he will continue to help us to do it. And but COVID has been difficult. We've tried some online stuff, but like you mentioned, live theater is something about it that is, you can't mimic it through film. You can't mimic it even through live streams. We did a performance over Zoom, which was fun.
It's not quite the same. It's been, as John said, it's been difficult. I mean, you know, for us, a lot of prayer, you know, just praying, just what, like, you know, what does God want us to do? That's a big part of everything that we do. And you know, he knew about COVID in the future. And so, you know, we put our trust in him, but also we want to try and, you know, kind of go adapt, be adaptable. So for example, our Easter play, what was funny is, well, I can laugh at it now, but unfortunately we had a big tour of our Easter production called Centurion, kind of all booked in
for 2020.
Yeah, ready to go. And it was a week before we were starting the tour that the lockdown, we went into a full lockdown. It all had to be obviously cancelled. The good thing is we're touring it this April. But it led to us actually for the next, was it next Easter? No, was that? No,
2021. Yeah.
2021. We launched it as a, well, we adapted it into a radio play, which is broadcast, which is again amazing, but because it challenged us with new different
another medium, yeah.
Yeah, another medium, different skills that we had to, you know, learn and stretch ourselves in that way. So it's been interesting, difficult, but
it's
I'm
been
hoping
a learning
that
time,
we're,
you know, the you know, David Mamet course. We wouldn't have done that if it weren't for COVID, and that was very influential.
Yeah, and that was
a time of retreat, but of development, and it's been a nice breath in and out.
Yeah,
to then take stock, and
hopefully we're now over the hump. You never know. It's like what's around the corner. But things are looking up at the moment. So yeah, that's kind of how we've dealt with COVID.
I'm glad that you talked about the learning aspect of it, because I did my series before this was called Act Two Places, and it happened probably, well, I wanted to do the series just as COVID hit. And so I put out a Facebook post saying, hey, if anybody would like to talk to me about this, I would really like to have you on the show for this particular series. When I did that at the beginning of COVID, I got nothing. It was crickets. And a lot of people will respond to that kind of an invitation on my show. And I was like, what happened? Nobody wants to do an episode with me. And my husband, David's like, everybody's head is just spinning right now and you need to back off a little bit and let people get through it. And then that was true. And then a lot of people came on the show, and did that. But one of the things that I loved about that series is a lot of the stuff that people learned by either doing Zoom or doing outside productions that were, social distanced, camera work, things like a lot of that.
True.
Is something that I think theater snobs would have like looked down their nose at beforehand, but they're saying, I learned this and now I want to incorporate it into live theater when we return. So I think that a lot, it opened a lot of people's minds to new concepts. I mean, we have a married couple who did a play through letters. I've interviewed a guy who does like a phone call play with individual people. I mean, I'm so glad that we have that time to really sort of take a break and educate ourselves. And I just wanted to say that because that is like so right on the money. And you know what? That's good leadership from you guys. That's using your time wisely and productively. And it's excellent leadership. And that's what a lot of people really had to step up and become if they weren't before.
I've always admired the quote that I came across at university. I think it's Hans Trey Lehmann saying that theater is either a museum or a laboratory. And I think this modern life has to influence how the stage works. And I think multimedia is an inevitability. If we want to engage with, you know, the 21st century audience whose lives are saturated by multimedia, I mean, that's something I've been really influenced by practitioners who use that. And I think it's something that really can bolster the live experience rather than hamper it. I think cinema is, you know, has always been the enemy of theatre, but I think recorded images and sound, I think they can only be used to absolutely amplify that. Like you were saying before, the ephemera, the visceral nature of what it is the theatre is and why it's so engaging. I think, yeah, placing it in juxtaposition to those things, yeah, can really make you think, oh, this is happening live. This is just for me right now, or just for us right now. So I can totally, I love the experimentation that comes from times of difficulty, you know, and it's, I love those things. I'd love to find out more about those interesting forms of performance that you're mentioning.
Well, the series is is available, and there were so many different types of things that people did. And I think that a lot of people did that to show that theater was not going to die, and we were going to keep it up, and we weren't going to let it die. And that we were going to utilize something that kept us in practice. That's what I, in my opinion, you know, doing all the, imagine if Zoom wasn't around through all of this. Yeah. And I know it's really, really difficult to do Zoom shows. Sorry, Zoom, if you're listening, which you probably are, because we're on Zoom right now. but I think that, you know, I've participated in readings. My husband David is an actor. He's probably done 30 readings over the last 2 years on Zoom. But it's kept us in practice. It's kept us going as artists. And for that, I'm super grateful. And a lot of my artistic stuff is through scripts and things like that. But I took the time to submit scripts to competitions and festivals and stuff. And I'm really glad that I did that. That worked out very well. But again, we told everybody through our actions that theater is not going to die out just because of this, that we will persevere and we'll overcome it. And I think that's the statement we were making with all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it gave us great opportunity. Like we said, with the radio play, it wasn't something we had done particularly before. But also, we were re-looking at the script of Centurion. And I love, again, it goes back to writing, but I love looking back and being like, where I thought, oh, this script is kind of finished. I mean, never say that, because I was like, we should change that, or we could maybe adapt that actually a bit more.
We used to hate redrafting, but now it's just a joy.
Yeah, I love looking back and now thinking, gosh, how far we've come. And that kind of, it was great.
What was I thinking last week?
Yeah. It definitely taught us a lot and gave us just different opportunities, you know.
Plus,
so which we're grateful for.
Because of COVID, they released the Hamilton video before it was going to be made into a film. So, you know, we were able to sit at home and rewatch Hamilton again and again and again, which is definitely what I did. I probably watched it 3 or 4 times in the first few months of lockdown.
Had either of you
a couple times,
or both of you, seen the physical production of it?
Yeah, I've seen it a couple times, but only in the real high, far away seats. So it's great to see it up close and personal.
Oh yeah, I think this came up in Reverend Albert's episode, but David and I saw the when it first was in previews in New York.
Oh wow.
And I have to say, it kind of left me cold. It really did. Wow. Rap music is not my favorite kind of music. I didn't understand a good deal of what they were singing. Most people, they prep themselves for this show. They listen to the show over and over again. But I probably have now seen it about 6 times just to understand it and to figure it out and to see what the big wow element is of it. Fortunately, I do a lot of my work in Chicago, my musical collaborators in Chicago, and they had a sit-down production there for about 3 years. So I got to see it there mostly because it didn't cost, you know, a down payment on a car's worth of for this. It's so expensive. It's still expensive. So,
yeah, over here, I mean, the London show, I mean, it's even for those tickets up in the gods, it was extortionate.
Yeah.
It's true. As you think about the cost of things, because there's a theatre company here called Punch Drunk doing a new production, I think called Burnt Cities, and we would generally be like, let's go, and I was like, oh, let's check tickets, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is so
early bird advance tickets are like about £100, and it's like Punch Drunk have Mask of the Red Death in New York, and I'd love to go see it over there because I've not been there, but you know, They do have multi-million pound sets, but at the same time, like, you could probably subsidize the ticket fee.
I mean, when we're talking about theater for everyone, I think that that is one of the biggest barriers currently is the cost. It's like, how are you going to get new people who might be skeptical about theater, and be like, you've got to pay though £100 for this ticket? You know, that's just, mm-hmm. It's a real shame.
Yeah, it's wrong, really.
Do you know who agrees with you? Patti LuPone, she does. I heard it like from her mouth to my ears. David and I went and saw Company, which she was in, and she's in on Broadway right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw that. It was a gender flip version of the show Company, no. Starring a lady named Rosalie Craig. And Company is about, typically, this is a new version of it, like a man who's, everybody's trying to get him married. Mm-hmm. It was written by Sondheim, and they kind of tweaked it and used a female actor in it. And it was brilliant. Usually that's a slog of a show for me, but it went by like that. Anyways, we did a Q&A afterwards with Rosalie Craig and Patti LuPone and the director, Marianne Elliott, who I love. She's so great that you guys have her there. And she brought that up many times when questions were being asked of her. She's like, you guys are lucky here in London because your theater is relatively cheap in comparison to Broadway. She's like, Broadway is just so prohibitive. She said that like three times then. And then she did something that we've been saying ever since, was some guy asked her a question of like, how do you get that same performance every single night or every time you go on stage? She leaned down and she goes, "Training." Oh my God. Did we just get read by Patti LuPone?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to film you or anything.
No, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do a speed round here.
Yes.
Okay. What is your favorite play?
Chris?
I love The Trial by Franz Kafka. Is this a speed one?
It's hard to say because I don't know whether things fall into the traditional plays. The piece I've loved the most I've seen over the last few years is a piece called The Wedding by Gecko Theatre Company based in the UK.
It's very good.
But yeah, they're a physical company, and I don't know whether they even have a written text which they go with. But yeah, I'll go with that.
Okay, favorite musical?
I mean, I'll go Hamilton.
I'm not a massive fan of musicals. I've seen my fair few. One that really sticks out to me is I did really enjoy Blood Brothers. It's very good.
Every time I go to London, I always threaten to see that, and for some reason I never do. But you go there. We go there a lot. Well, not for the last 2 years, but you go there and you're on vacation. You sort of. You have to pick and choose because of the time. But next time I go, I'm seeing Blood Brothers for sure.
Yeah, it is amazing. It's really good.
Okay. Favorite one-person show?
Again, the list of things I've got to see are so obscure and unusual in terms of one-person shows. Ones that I've not seen... I've always admired the now deceased performance artist Adrian Howells. He did a show called Foot Washing for the Soul, and that was a one-to-one performance, which I'd studied a bit at uni, and I would have loved to have taken part in that. So we washed the feet of his audience members.
I'm going to cheat and say our own play.
Okay.
If Prison Walls Could Speak.
Excuse me, your head. I think it's your head right now.
No,
I apologize for that throw.
Nothing's springing to my mind right now. So that's the only thing I can think of.
We should go and watch more there.
Yeah.
As someone who has written co-written his own one person show that's been produced quite a bit, I totally agree.
Good.
I would say mine too.
Good.
Actually, no. I would probably say The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe, because I think that's a great play. And I'm going to, here's a name in my hand. I'm going to drop it on the ground.
Go on.
Is performed by my cousin, Lily Tomlin. My cousin is Lily Tomlin.
Oh,
you know who Lee Tomlin is?
I out of politeness, I said yes.
You did? So no. She's in a show called Grace and Frankie with Jane Fonda. If you watch that, and she's in the movie 9 to 5. Have you seen the movie 9 to 5? She plays Violet. She's a legend in the States. And honestly, if she walked into a room, she wouldn't know who I was. I've met her a couple of times, but like,
Sean, drop that name again.
I'm hoping.
Oh my days. I can't believe it.
Right. Oh, Lily Tomlin. Wow. Yeah, you're not the first person that I've had to say.
I'm sorry.
This. No, that's
I
okay.
wish I did know. I'm the problem. I'm the problem. I don't
know. No, you're not. And hopefully when we finish and I get up to go, I'm not going to trip all over it, but yeah. I don't drop it that often, but David does. For sure.
we drop the Queen thing all the time.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Oh my God. I saw it on your website. Tell me about that. Tell me about performing for Her Majesty, Her Royal Majesty, Queen Elizabeth II, who we're obsessed with in the States.
I can't believe that it wasn't me that dropped that name.
I know. The most nerve-wracking experience, probably. I mean, I think I was so nervous that it kind of balanced it out in the weirdest kind of way. Because when we stepped out,
it was an out-of-body experience. It was.
Yeah.
It was
when weird. We stepped out, she was literally on the stage, which was really not that,
technical that usual, term, the chancel of the church.
The chancel of the church. Yeah. I shouldn't say stage, but the chancel. But yeah, so we were literally less than 5 meters.
Yeah. Definitely. A few feet away.
So, and it was being filmed, so it went on national TV, so it was on BBC One.
And you know what, I had the honor of meeting her beforehand, and even though the performance was only short, she's just an incredible presence to be around, because she gives you her whole self when you're there. You know, she when she met me, she seemed interested in me, and she seemed interested in what we did. Who knows what she was thinking. I'm a bit, I love the Queen. I love the Queen.
And I'll give you a little Easter egg. I don't know if you can still, I think it might be on YouTube somewhere, but,
we talk about it on our podcast.
Yeah. But if you look closely, there's a part where we have these World War One helmets and we put them on, and I was kind of ducking down as we're putting them on, to stay low so people couldn't see us put it on. And because I was trying to say solo, I actually donked my head with the helmet. Now, I don't think anyone noticed, you know, in the audience, but if you rewatch it, you'll hear you can actually hear the little donk as it hits my head. But but everything went smoothly. Thank God. But yeah, what an honor experience.
To do that. Yeah.
You were putting on a costume piece, a helmet, mm-hmm. and you kind of tapped her on the head with it.
No, his head. No, my head. Oh, he would have been shot. He would have been you would have been taken out if that had happened.
Yeah, it was as I was putting it on my head.
I
donked my own head.
Oh,
but,
when you were putting it on. I mean,
if it was the Queen, I would have been, I'd be in the Tower of London now.
You would cease to exist. There would be no record.
I would have dropped down to, I would have just started crying immediately in hopes that she would take pity on me, drop down and just like laid on the floor. But, from everything that I see about her, I feel like she would be like a real person. I mean, you go through life like that and you're different from a regular person, but she would be like a real person who understands that there are mistakes and flaws throughout a day. And that's just when whenever I see her, I remember there was a special on where somebody was opening the crown jewels or bringing them to her. She said, they're like, okay, here's the crown from the coronation. And she said, I haven't touched this since the coronation. And I thought, I like that. That says a lot. That says a lot. You know, maybe if it were mine, I'd wear it everywhere. Seriously.
I would as well.
I think we wouldn't last very long in our neighborhood. We would be robbed very quickly.
Right? Yeah. When you see that, you know, she loves, I guess, her subjects, her people, in that, like, you know, she... How old is she now? 90
She's
something?
The same age as my granddad. She's 96.
She's 96, and she's still trying to get out there. The only thing that's really stopped her from being able to go out is obviously COVID. But she's been doing some stuff after COVID, you know, and she's 96, you know, so that shows a real dedication and service to the country. That's just amazing.
She's a public servant. She's done very well.
Yeah.
And I will be very sad when she's no longer with us.
Yeah. Yeah. So will I. I really will. That somebody did a show about like everything that's already in place for that. And I thought, you know, I know I'm watching it, but don't be macabre. Don't be like this about, you know, when the queen dies.
If we don't speak about it, it won't happen.
Okay. We're done with that. Before we go, please give our audience your social media information so they can keep up with you both and your many endeavors.
Of course, yeah. If you want to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we don't really tweet much, but we're Artless UK, at Artless UK, A-R-T-L-E-S-S UK. And we have a podcast called More Than the Art, available everywhere you get your podcasts.
And we are...
Not as good as your podcast.
Oh, stop.
No, definitely.
I mean, you have fantastic guests on.
I agree. I have great taste in guests.
And if you are in the UK... do check up on our website, because our tour dates, you know, they go up on there. So if you want to kind of catch one of our shows, we'll be touring particularly this Easter in April and throughout the year. So yeah, if you're listening and you're in the UK, do try and make one of our performances.
Yeah. So they can catch all of that by going to your website, and it will connect them to all of those various social media apps and your podcast. That's great. That's awesome. You guys, this has been so cool. I'm so glad we had the chance to do this. I am so glad that I woke up and started doing this at 7 o'clock in the morning. And it was totally worth it.
That's so nice. Thank you.
Oh yeah. This has really been amazing. I appreciate you opening up your minds and your hearts to me and telling us about your perspective and your thoughts on some of the philosophies. They're all the philosophies that we've talked about, and telling us what a pantomime is and whether it's dramaturg or dramaturge. You guys were amazing. I can't thank you enough. And I wish you many, many broken legs and so much continued success with the Artless Theater Company. Chris and John, thank you very much for being on your program.
Thank you so much, Sean.
Thanks for having us, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Well, folks, the 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. Once again, a big thanks to directors John Moltz and Chris Poach of the Artless Theater Company. Excellent conversation. You can find more episodes of your program, Is Your Ticket, on the Broadway Podcast Network, who has honored me with a place on their incredible theater podcast platform. Broadway Podcast Network is all about creating an engaging, immersive, user-friendly experience where theater stories of all kinds can be easily found, shared, and enjoyed. Please visit them on my landing page at bpn.fm/ypiyt. Again, that's bpn.fm/ypiyt. Your Program Is Your Ticket is also on Facebook at facebook.com, Your Program Is Your Ticket. I'm on Twitter at Program Ticket, Instagram at Your Program Is Your Ticket, YouTube at Your Program Is Your Ticket, iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, Deezer, TuneIn, Listen Notes, and the UK-based theater platform Thespie. FYI, I appreciate all good ratings, reviews, and subscriptions. Folks, take a little time to visit theater websites and see what they have to offer. Watch their content, give them all great ratings and reviews, and most importantly, donate, donate, donate. It's the fastest way you can help them. As always, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. And remember, theater is for everyone.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.